the things that I believe God wants to do in us in these coming weeks and months is develop a much deeper sense of communion with him. Mm. Much deeper sense that we know that he's with us and that we can never be alone. But there's something that has to happen before that, and that's you've got to realize that you're far away from home. So I'm just warning you that over these coming weeks, some of you may come to the realization and feel that you are far away from home. But I'm letting you know it's okay. It's going to be okay. Because you have to come to understand how far away you are to understand how close he is. And you can't understand how close he is until you understand how far away you are. But it is going to be an utterly beautiful sense of communion with him if you are willing to recognize, acknowledge how far away you actually are. And of course, you're not really far away because he's with you all the time. So I'm just letting you know that when you're sat in a room full of people and you feel completely alone and it feels overwhelming, it's okay. Because it's the first step to know these words. I read them a few weeks ago and I realized I was a bit early in sharing them. But we are going to be able to say these words in much greater measure. Oh, I hope I can find them now. Anyway, it's the words of Jesus, and he says, I am not alone, for my Father is with me. And there is going to be an absolute deeper sense of that, whether you are surrounded by people or feel completely unsurrounded by people. There is a whole sense coming that you will be able to say with him, I am not alone, for my Father is with me. Which has got nothing to do with what I want to talk about this morning. Well, actually, maybe it does, actually, thinking about it. Maybe it does. Maybe it does, actually. I want to link what Alan talked about last week from 2 Chronicles 20. If you were not with us, it's up on our YouTube channel and SoundCloud. I'd encourage you to watch it from 2 Chronicles 20. I want to link that back into John chapter 4, where Derek started us off at the start of the year. And I want to answer a couple of questions this week and next week. I realized I had too much to do in one go. So this week and next week, before we get to Easter, we're going to talk about those verses in 2 Chronicles 20, what it might mean to face the battle and fight. But I want to start in John 4. Now, Jesus had to go through Samaria. Now, I shared this back at the end of January. He didn't technically have to go through Samaria because he could have gone round. That's what every Jew did. They went round because the Jews and Samaritans, they hated each other. It goes back thousands of years when Israel was divided into two. And basically, over 1,000 years, they did this, they did that, they retaliated. Nobody really knows why. Story of the world. Okay? Nobody can quite remember why we hate these people. We just know we hate them. Because thousands of years ago, somebody did something. This is where it's at. Which, of course, is what happens when we live in a world of revenge rather than a world of forgiveness. We end up hating everybody. That's just what happens. But by the time Jesus is born, he's living in this culture where the Jews deeply mistrusted the Samaritans, and hate's probably not too strong a word, but we really had to go through Samaria. It was needful that Jesus went through a dangerous place, a challenging place, an unfamiliar place. But he had to go through. It had to go through an unfamiliar, challenging, and potentially inhospitable and unfriendly place. Not only did Jesus go through it, but he led his disciples through it too, because they end up there later on trying to give him some food. These good Jewish lads were taken into all sorts of out-of-bounds places by Jesus, but it was necessary for them to get into their future. And it is necessary for us to get into our future. Because in order to get into the future, that you can probably scrub Mike from there, you have to go through some unfamiliar and challenging places. That's where we're at right now as a church, unfamiliar places in many ways, individually, corporately, some unfamiliarity. And that's okay. That's fine. You just have to know that's where it's at right now. So that's okay. And fighting the unfamiliarity is not helpful. But accepting the unfamiliarity and knowing there's a way through it is helpful. Because of course, in terms of unfamiliar and challenging, John's words about Jesus, quoting Isaiah, he says, the crooked ways shall become straight. So many times when we're in unfamiliar or challenging times, the roads all look crooked and difficult to navigate. We're not quite sure of the way forward. But the promise of Jesus and the promise of Isaiah doesn't promise they'll be straight at first. It promises the crooked roads will become straight and the rough ways will be made smooth. So it's okay if the path is a little bit crooked, a little bit rough. That's okay. That's fine, because it's going to become straight and it'll become smooth. But it only becomes straight and smooth if you stay on the path. If you stop, nothing can change. But as you move forward, it can become straight and it become smooth. So at this time, it's not about looking for the straight, smooth path, but the path less trodden, that looks a little bit crooked and rough, but trusting as we walk it with him, he will make it smooth, and he will make it straight, and he will. I am absolutely assured that he will. Our job is to keep walking and trust that just because we can't see around the corner, he's there, and he's with us, and he's faithful. And of course, I shared a bit of that at the end of January, but I wanted to share it again because I felt like it flowed very nicely into what Alan shared about battles and what he was seeing. There's no doubt we're in a time of transition as a family, which is challenging but also exciting. And I want to bring out some of the truths Alan shared from 2 Chronicles 20, and I'm going to review a little bit of that. But I really want to ask this question over the next 2 weeks. What does it mean for us to fight in this season? What does that look like? Originally, I just had the question, what does it mean for us to fight? But then I realized, no. What does it mean for us, this group of people, in this season right now? Because what it might have meant for us to fight in previous seasons may well look differently. In fact, it does look differently. So you've got to know, if you're going to use some energy to fight some battles, you best know you're fighting the right battles, first of all, and you best know you're fighting them in the right way. And the strategy is quite different to what I would have taught and preached a few years ago. But that's okay, because we're in a different place than we were a few years ago. And I'm in a different place to where I was a few years ago. So hopefully we're growing, which means we're not just kind of trotting out the same old all the time, because we're seeing different things, we're growing, If I'm growing and I'm going through school, I'm not studying the same things at GCSE, I am in year 7. And I'm not studying the same things and learning the same things, and I'm doing different things I'm becoming aware of. Suddenly now there's things that I was told were impossible in maths at year 4 that are now very possible. Okay, because I'm growing and we're opening up. So it's a good thing. It's a good thing. But 2 Chronicles 20 tells the story of Jehoshaphat, who was one of the few good Israelite kings, and it's his encounter with some other tribes who have come to make war on him. So he learns in verse 2 that a couple of the baddies are coming to take him out. And they're about a day's march away. I want to read you his prayer when he hears of this march. And as I read it to you, I want you to be thinking of his focus. Where is his focus on this prayer? What is he talking about? Then Jehoshaphat stood up in the assembly of Judah and Jerusalem at the temple of the Lord in the front of the new courtyard and said, Lord, the God of our ancestors, are you not the God who is in heaven? You rule over all the kingdoms of the nations. Power and might are in your hand, and no one can withstand you. Our God, did you not drive out the inhabitants of this land before your people Israel and give it forever to the descendants of Abraham, your friend? They have lived in it and have built in it a sanctuary for your name, saying, if calamity comes upon us, whether the sword of judgment or plague or famine, we will stand in your presence before this temple that bears your name, and we will cry out to you in distress, and you will hear us and save us. But now, here are men from Ammon, Moab, and Mount Seir, whose territory you would not allow Israel to invade when they came from Egypt. So they turned away from them and did not destroy them. See how they are repaying us by coming to drive us out of the possession you gave us as an inheritance. Our God, will you not judge them? For we have no power to face this vast army that is attacking us. We do not know what to do, but our eyes are on you. Did you notice that of those three slides, three lines are about the enemy? Three lines are about the problem. Three lines are about the challenge. Everything else is about the God who is on their side. And in just a few verses, he commits it to God. He seeks God's favor. He acknowledges God's sovereignty. He takes comfort in God's promises. He confesses his dependence upon God. But what is impressive about it all is his focus. His focus is entirely on God, what he has done, can do, and will do. There is very little in this prayer about the threat that's coming towards him, about the opponent that he's facing. There's very little time spent complaining about what's happening and why God didn't sort it out before and what's happened now. He's just, okay. Compare that with your speech and your prayer and your focus. His focus is pretty much entirely on the God that will deliver him, not on the huge problem that is a distant archway. And I love that last line. We don't know what to do, but our eyes are on you. We don't know what to do, but our eyes are on you. This focus on God rather than the challenge in front of him continues throughout the whole chapter. For me, the whole strategy, and this is for us, the whole strategy is based around focus and where that focus is. Where does a lot of our mental and emotional energy get spent? Does it get spent on the problem and declaring the problem and telling God about the problem and the issue and the challenge? Does it get spent telling all our friends about the problem? Does it spend every time we sit down, we tell them the same problem and the same story? Where does it get spent? That is not the pattern Jehoshaphat lays out. Jehoshaphat lays out a completely different way of facing the problem. You see, if our focus is wrong, we'll struggle to see victory and breakthrough. If our focus is wrong, we'll struggle to see victory and breakthrough. But after Jehoshaphat prays, a Levite prophesies and says this in verse 15 and verse 17. It's some of what I read at the beginning. Listen, King Jehoshaphat and all who live in Judah and Jerusalem, this is what the Lord says. Do not be afraid or discouraged because of this vast army, for the battle is not yours but God's. You will not have to fight this battle. Take up your positions, stand firm, and see the deliverance the Lord will give you, Judah and Jerusalem. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. Go out to face them tomorrow, and the Lord will be with you. So the message is really clear. You don't have to fight it, but you do have to face it. You don't have to fight it, but you do have to face it. And as I listened to Alan last week, one of the questions I wrote down was, what's the difference between facing it and fighting it? Because it's clear if you get that wrong, you're not going to win. So what does it mean to face your battles and what does it mean to fight them? And it was clear to me that God was saying something to us both corporately and individually about this season that ties in with Derek's word from John 4 about having to go through Samaria. And I sense what Alan brought was a challenge to work out what that meant. It was a question about what it means to face the battle and what the strategy for the fight was. It was clear that God would do some things on our behalf, but the question naturally arises, well, what's our part? Well, the first thing is this. You don't have to fight the battle, but you do have to face the battle. And so this morning, I just want to finish off by talking about facing it, and next we're going to talk about what it means to fight, which doesn't involve much fighting, by the way. Well, it does, it's just not the fighting you might be thinking of. One of the key lines is in verse 17. The prophet was very clear, go out to face them tomorrow, and the Lord will be with you. So he's got to go out and face up to what's against him. And that is very, very key for us right now in this season, whether that be individually or corporately, we have to face up to the reality of what's before us. And facing up to the reality of it means being truly honest about the reality of the situation and facing up to the facts of the situation. This is often one of the hardest things to do, especially if what we are seeing is not what we want to see. So a lot of the time we look, and because we don't want to see it, we pretend it's not there. Or we make it a bit prettier than it really is. That's okay, that's called being a human being. You don't want to face reality. It's what Paul taught us for the last 3 or 4 years. Nobody wants to look at reality. But actually, for us right now, we've got, wherever you are at, whatever this means for you, facing reality is always key. There's a reason the first step of the 12-step program is admitting there's a problem. Because until you admit there's a problem, you can do nothing. Until you admit there's actually a problem and the reality of the problem, you can go, you know, if you're an alcoholic, but you don't think you are an alcoholic, nobody can help you. And they won't accept you to a 12-step program or any real rehab program because it won't work. Because first of all, you've got to accept this is in front of me. This is what I'm facing. This is what's going on. Facing the fight means you must be willing to face it and frame it. Frame it as it is, not what you would like it to be. Frame it as it is. To face it and frame it in all its dirty glory. And if you read through the story in 2 Chronicles, you find that when they eventually reach the place of battle, there is no fighting to be done because God has gone before them and dealt with their enemy. But they had to go out and face the reality of their situation before God would do that. Because that was the instruction. You've got to face it. You see, before we can talk about any strategies for fighting, we first have to name the battles we're facing and face them head on in truth and reality. No strategy can work well if we don't know what we're facing. One of the greatest military strategists ever was a Chinese general, Sun Tzu, who wrote The Art of War sometime between 475 and 221 BC. This is one of his more famous quotes from that book. If you know the enemy and know yourself, you need not fear the result of 100 battles. If you know yourself but not the enemy, for every victory gained, you will also suffer a defeat. If you know neither the enemy nor yourself, you will succumb in every battle. If you know the enemy and you know yourself, you need not fear the result of 100 battles. So it's really important to know what you are facing, that you know your enemy, as it were. What battles are you facing right now? What battles are we facing together right now? Can you clearly name it as it really is? Can you express what's actually going on and where the real issue lies? And of course, often we try and frame the challenge as an external one, but in truth, every challenge is also an internal. The external things are just the ways we think the challenge will be met, but there'll always be some internal things going on as well. And to me, it's a bit like that's about knowing yourself. So there's knowing the enemy, and that's, okay, yeah, well, there's this relationship issue, I need a job, there's this, whatever it might be. Okay, that's the battle. But then there's something on the inside going on as well. And that's knowing yourself. And most of us might be able to name our external battles. We're facing some sort of loss or challenging relationship, lack of finance, struggles with health. That's the battle, perhaps. But then you've got to know yourself. How does it affect you? How do you feel about that? And then the really key question, What is God wanting to do in you in the midst of the fight? What is he wanting to do in you? It may well be, in fact, that's not true. It is that he is wanting to form you in new ways and teach you new things. And we have a great tendency to want everything fixing, but God is into the molding business. He's into the business of forming you, and his primary focus is for you to become more human. And remember, more human means looking like Jesus, because he is the only fully human being. Father's heart is you would more and more reflect your original good design. And that's his heart, because that's what you ultimately want and desire and what will ultimately bring you peace and joy. But what is God wanting to do in you in the midst of whatever is going on? You don't have to fight the battle, but you do have to face it. And the question before we can get on to talk about any strategy is to clearly and honestly name and identify what we are facing, both externally and internally. Because once you do that, you can face 100 battles and you'll win. But you've got to name what's external and you've got to name what's internal. And then you'll find yourself in a place of winning all the time. And of course, this is not an either-or situation, because we're living in both and, not either-or. So this is not a case of, right, well, I've kind of named everything really clearly, then I'm going to... No. Just start where you are. Start where you are. And move a little bit forward. It's not about getting it all sorted, knowing it all, getting it all down. It's just start where we are. We move a little bit forward. But we will need to, and you will need to, face those things. But in the facing of them, God will do some beautiful things. He will do some beautiful things, but you will have to face, and you'll have to acknowledge them to yourself, to somebody else. And in that facing and acknowledging, God will do some beautiful things. And here's why. Because in the facing of it, the acknowledging it and the naming of it, you bring it into the light. And once it's in the light, God's got it. And God can act. But when it's not named and shared, it's in the darkness. And he can't do anything when it's in the darkness. That's why the naming and framing of it is so, so important. Okay, let's just take a moment, shall we? Let's just take a moment. As I said, naming and framing what's actually before us is one of the hardest things to do, especially if what we are seeing is not what we want to see. But if there's one principle that I have seen work, if you like, it's this principle. And I can honestly say that every time somebody has named and framed something, God has moved. God has moved powerfully every single time. Father, I thank you that you see all things, Lord. You already know corporately exactly what's going on, and you know individually what's going on for each and every one of us, Lord. It's crystal clear to you, Lord. And you are not shocked or surprised by any of it, Lord. And there is no condemnation or judgment in your heart. Because you have loved us. So there's nothing we can name or frame that would have any impact on your heart for us, Lord. Because your love is continual and constant, and you already know it anyway. And Father, right now, I just want to release peace into our hearts, Lord. Just peace into our hearts, Lord. Those things that have been going around our minds that we're kind of aware of, but don't really want a name, for that would make it a reality. But it is a reality, whether you name it or not. But when you name it, we bring it into the light. And Jesus can do beautiful things, and does and will do beautiful things. So Father, right now, just release your peace, Lord. Just see, you've all got peace. Just put your hand on your heart. You've all got peace. Some of you are just more aware of it than others. Father, we thank you for the Christ that indwells each of us. And the peace that transcends all understanding that is already in our hearts, Father. We just release peace into our hearts, Lord. That you have got us. And that whatever is before us, you are there. May the peace of Christ rule your heart.